Welcome to the MMA Roadshow bonus edition. This is episode number 42 and a half. Coming to you live from Boston, Massachusetts, Beantown, where we were witness to an incredible UFC bantamweight title fight. UFC Fight Night 81, Dominic Cruz and new UFC bantamweight champion in a thrilling fight with TJ Dillashaw. A grudge match of sorts, and certainly one for the history books. It was an incredible fight, no doubt about it. It was everything we thought it would be. The movement was there. The speed was there. The creativity was there. Everything we thought was going to happen was going to be there. But Dominic Cruz capped off an incredible comeback. Three separate ACL surgeries over the past 4 years that have kept him all but out of action, out of the public limelight, cost him literally millions of dollars. But now he can put all that behind him and start building towards the future as he is your new UFC bantamweight champion. My name is John Morgan, of course. I regret to say that my man Cole Coffey is not with me tonight. Cole Coffey had to stay back home in Las Vegas. I was actually here with Matt Erickson, who you heard from earlier in the week if you listened to the show. But in one of the most bizarre stories in MMA junkie history, Matt Erickson came down with a case of food poisoning and had to leave press row early tonight and come back to the apartment where we were staying this week in Boston, just across from TD Garden, and finish working from there. And he is actually, as I record this, it is 5:12 in the a.m., still going strong. But my man, Matt Erickson, he had an early flight out. I think he booked like a 5:45 flight. So he has left me here alone, damn it. I got nobody here to share in this afterglow of this incredible fight. Let's talk about it. Listen, going into the fight, I picked Dominic Cruz. But I have to admit, it was a lot about intangibles. It really wasn't about the things that I could say for sure. I mean, the guy that we've seen a lot of is TJ Dillashaw. And of course, he's looked absolutely fantastic in his run to the title and his run as UFC bantamweight champion. And of course, we just seen him. We knew what to expect. We knew how good he could look. Dominic Cruz had all these question marks around him because he has had to deal with the injuries and he has not been fighting actively. And so the question marks were there, but as I got here to Boston this week and really just spending some time around Dominic Cruz, you know, talked to him a little bit last week on the phone and then spent some time around him this week and just, you know, kind of seeing his workout, seeing the way he looked. He looked very much to be at full speed. Didn't look like the knee injury was going to be an issue. And he had this incredible confidence. It's a confidence that is kind of hard to explain sometimes. It's very much like the confidence, say, that Chris Weidman had ahead of his fights with Anderson Silva, where it's just, I've always said, I think there's guys that you can tell they're trying to hype themselves up, and then there's guys that really, truly believe in themselves. They've reached a point where they believe in themselves, and they're not trying to hype themselves up, and that's where Dominic Cruz was. And so that's why I kind of leaned to him in my pick. And you know, I always do a little video every week with the rest of our staff, and we kind of lay out why we're picking somebody. And, you know, I'd like to have more tangible data. You know, I do think Simon Head, for instance, out of the UK, had a great point where he talked about Dominic Cruz's head movement versus TJ Dillashaw's just kind of overall movement. You know, I think Dominic Cruz really does a better job of, while they both have very similar styles, I think Dominic Cruz does a better job of implementing it and is even more frantic, so to speak, than TJ Dillashaw. So, you know, I guess that was part of it going in. But, man, it still felt like it was a little bit of a gamble. And that's why I said, you know, make sure you're not putting any money down on my picks. Because, listen, man, this is just kind of a feel more than pure hard data. And it worked out that way. But I'll tell you what, as this fight was going along, I did not score this fight for Dominic Cruz. I scored this fight for TJ Dillashaw. I gave rounds 1, 4, and 5 to TJ Dillashaw. I gave rounds 2 and 3 to Dominic Cruz. So I had it 48-47 for TJ Dillashaw. But I tell you what, once again, in a situation where I think throwing out the word robbery would be incorrect. I think that every one of these rounds was very close. I think that they were well matched. And I tell you what, as I sit here again early in the morning, there's a replay that's going to come on Fox Sports 1, and you know I'll probably be paying attention to this thing in the background. I'll certainly be watching it again this week. Unfortunately, we don't have an event this week, so I can you know take some time and watch it again. If you tell me you had it 48-47, Dominic Cruz, I've got no problem with that. I really don't. It's funny. I was sitting next to Brett Okamoto tonight from ESPN, and we were talking about it as we go along, and making notes and what did you think and what do you, and man we were different, And, you know, we both, I think, kind of admitted, like, gosh, that's so random. It's funny because it reminded me of what scoring a Dominic Cruz fight is like. It's tough, man. The way the guy fights, it's tough to score. And, you know, what's the power shot? What's not? How are they weighing against it? Man, it's fun to watch. And these two guys, I thought, put on an entertaining scrap. But I think it was a very close one. If you look at the scores and you pull out the judges' scores, the judges that were in attendance were Dave Ginsburg, Tony Weeks, and Sal D'Amato. They only agreed on one round, and that is round two for Dominic Cruz. So all three judges had round two for Dominic Cruz. The rest are all different. Now, here's something that I think you'll find interesting. Rounds one, four, and five were two judges to one for TJ Dillashaw. Okay? Let that process a little bit. Two judges to one for TJ Dillashaw. Now, it wasn't the same scores, okay? Because it was Sal D'Amato had this thing 49-46 TJ Dillashaw. The only round he gave was round two to Dominic Cruz. Meanwhile, Tony Weeks had it 49-46 the other way for Dominic Cruz. He only gave TJ Dillashaw round one. And Dave Ginsburg had the fight 48-47 for Dominic Cruz, giving him rounds one, two, and three. So, you know, tough, I know, sometimes to run that through your head. Certainly, the scorecard is up online for you to look at as well. But interesting note that three of the rounds saw two judges to one favor TJ Dillashaw, and it was actually the three rounds that I scored for TJ Dillashaw as well. But it doesn't matter. Dominic Cruz walks away with the belt. Again, don't think this was a robbery. Think it was just a very, very close fight. Props to both guys. Very entertaining stuff. Nonstop movement from all of them. I will say, I thought, you know, and I talked to TJ Dillashaw a little bit afterwards, but, you know, you did see TJ Dillashaw's movement kind of settle. I thought in the very beginning, you know, he was almost exaggerating his movements, you know, just to show Dominic Cruz, hey, I can out-Dominic Cruz you. I feel like, you know, whether that was subconsciously or something he was really trying to do, I feel like, you know, he did something maybe even just not out of character, but really just kind of stepping it up a notch to try to show that he can hang. And as time went on, he slowed down a little bit. So, again, just can't praise these guys enough. I thought it was a really cool moment in TD Garden as well because, you know, the lighter weight classes have had issues over the years. We're all aware of that. It's no secret that it's been tougher to market these guys than it is some of the bigger guys. But with 30 seconds left, the TD Garden crowd kind of got up on their feet, man. It was a standing ovation for the final 30 seconds, and I thought that was a really cool scene because I think it really showed their appreciation for how this fight went down. Man, I'm telling you, Brett Okamoto, I was sitting next to him, and I halfway joked, but I was like, dude, you know, we might have a split decision score of 50-45, 45-50, 50-45, and we actually came pretty much close. I was really more joking than anything, but we did have a 49-46 and a 46-49. It just goes to show how well matched these guys were, how you know, their styles really do kind of match up to each other so well. So, but Dominic Cruz is your new UFC Bantamweight champion. So, as we like to do on the bonus edition, the first thing I did was run back to the press room once I got the play-by-play all filed up, and I grabbed a respected journalist to try to get his opinion on how things went down and kind of what it all meant, and just doing it in the immediate aftermath. No time to think about it, no time to process the press conference or anything like that. And I grabbed Mr. Jack Encarnacion, who is a Boston resident, works in the local Boston market as well. Of course, you probably know him from his Sure Dog efforts as well, and wanted to just grab him and talk to him about what was a fun card. So while I get myself a frosty beverage, yes, it is early in the morning, but that doesn't count for me because I'm still going strong for the night before. So I'm going to set myself up, and while I do that, listen to the great Jack Encarnacion provide some fantastic insight on his thoughts on UFC Fight Night 81. Well, Jack, I know you're usually the man that likes to think things through and revisit and rewind.
Here we go. Here we go.
With much consideration, but let's let's take all that out of the equation. Okay. We're just a few minutes removed from this fight.
Yes.
Give me your thoughts on it. Was this the right score? How did you have it? Talk to me about it.
Well, first, the evasive point I have to make so I can avoid giving a pick right now, but I won't. I will tell you what I scored it. But I just got finished saying after the Waller-Condit fight, why does it always come down to one round? Why are there never two close rounds? And we just got five close rounds. I mean, good luck, you know, getting a consensus on any one of those frames. I mean, you had a fight where Dillashaw was moving forward. He was putting his kicks in the right position, but Dominic was really good with jabs. He was finding a home for hooks down the stretch. Both fighters bloodied each other up. I had round one Dillashaw, round two Cruz. Round three is a total toss-up to me, especially in that very closing kind of cuffing hook that Cruz landed that totally threw off a round that I had in mind for Dillashaw. And then I went four Cruz, five Dillashaw. So I had it 48-47 for TJ Dillashaw. As close as all those rounds were, still feel weird about a 49-46.
Yeah.
And I think the crowd kind of groaned at that too. It was remarkable, and I love that the crowd was with it the whole time. Mm-hmm. They weren't ready to crap on that, you know, as some kind of like these evasive hyper-technical moves as being somehow less than interesting. They were ready for anything to pop off at any moment, and I think that's a credit to Dominic Cruz, who like completely injected personality into this fight and like built this idea around TJ Dillashaw where you were like intrigued by the fact that he was kind of saying nothing in the lead up to the fight. It was almost good that he was saying nothing because it helped Dom say even more. And I'm happy to see him the champ again. It's like, you know, we've reconnected these dots and we're back in 2011, so let's pick up where we left off, 2012.
You said something pretty fun there. The crowd was awesome. I thought, first of all, hearing the shouts of Cruz throughout the night was amazing because that's not something we've heard before. And then Boston represented very well. I thought exactly what you said, to get up on their feet in the last 30 yeah. seconds and really just kind of applaud what was a war, even if it was a technical war. I thought that said a lot, and I thought it was pretty interesting to see that Cruz has become a bit of a crowd favorite.
Yeah, totally. Every time his face showed up on the screen and at the weigh-ins too, a roaring reaction to this guy, like he's like a super baby face, which is hilarious because he's saying things and carrying himself the same way he did when everybody hated him for mm-hmm. it, you know. But if you pick the right foil, you know, if you're Chael and you go after Anderson as opposed to a fan favorite, or if you throw shade on somebody that tries to act like they're above the give and take, the verbal give and take that's so central to this sport, the crowd's going to side with you. And yeah, Dominic Cruz, who thought that with all of this inactivity that it would make him more relevant?
Crazy.
And here we are. I mean, I feel like his stock is at an all-time high despite losing years of his prime earning life. It's pretty remarkable what he's managed to do, and it's a testament to speaking your mind and having something to say in mixed martial arts.
It really is. Let's talk about the score itself. You mentioned it, five close rounds. I was sitting next to Brett Okamoto. Him and I were kind of reviewing every round. We were both all over the place, and I said, it would not shock me to see 50-45, 45-50, you
yeah.
know, being a little
yeah.
facetious,
obviously. Yeah, 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 yeah.
It was kind of weird to see 49-46, 46-49, but what do you take? Because you said it. It was hard to tell the difference in these rounds, and I felt the same. I mean, every single round, I'm like, gosh, one punch here,
I
there.
Know.
So is this just one where we just chalk it up and say, well, damn it, this sport is hard to score sometimes, or is there something that jumps out at you as we got to do something?
You know, it really comes down to judges being more willing to give 10-10 rounds, so that when we see a fight that we felt like neither guy won, not because they were inactive or boring, but because they were both equally excellent, we should have more draws.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that's not really the best from a business perspective in terms of matchmaking going forward, but I think that's really what's missing in this equation, is the likelihood and the possibility in the fighters' minds and in the judges' minds that a close round could be a 10-10. That's not the default. And both guys don't seem to start with 10 points in that way. So, you know, I've thought a lot about it, and I'm a supporter of the half-point system. And I look forward to going back over this fight, even though it's never going to happen. I'm not saying that there's any legs to that idea. I think its time has come and gone. But I look forward to going back and looking at the fight and seeing if that finer gradient between 9 and 9.5 would have given me more clarity as far
right.
as who actually won. Look forward to the fight metric stats. I look forward to people pouring over those and acting like they had a live count in their head when they were watching the fight.
Right.
You know, retroactively after seeing the stats, acting like they saw the fight that way on first watch. That's always entertaining in this great sport, as people put up a front and act like they know. But it's a great fight. It's fascinating, and it's really refreshing, like I said, to have it be received as something great. I mean, when they came up at 30 seconds and were on their feet, I almost felt like I was missing something.
Yeah.
Something else was going in the crowd. Maybe a fight broke out.
There must have been a fight somewhere.
Yeah, because they really hadn't done anything more, you know, offensively substantial. You know, they were just, it was just 30 seconds were left in this fight, and I was heartened to see that a fight like that now has a place in the larger, you know, nature of the sport and the spectator appeal of it.
Nice. Obviously, I think the hardcore MMA fans will know you from your work with Sherdog, but of course, the Boston Globe here as well.
Herald.
Excuse
Boston
me.
Herald.
Paul Johns,
no problem.
Paul
That's
Johns.
Okay. It's all right. I don't mind, but they would.
They certainly will. What's the big story from the Boston point of view? I mean, obviously, the main event was big, but a couple of local guys, you know, that look great tonight. What's the big story coming out tonight?
Well, I think Rob Font is one of the guys with the most upside locally in a long time. A guy who you really can see putting a title campaign together after two or three more wins. Remarkably composed. You know, walks into the cage and out of the cage like he belongs here. You know, none of this lost in the lights. You know, kind of like, you know, starry-eyed approach to the game. He's looking, he's moving on. He's got remarkable poise on his feet. He knows when to time his strikes. He knows how to deal with an opponent who just, you know, lets hands fly in response to his more measured approach, and he doesn't get clipped in the process. He's well-trained. He's powerful for a weight, and he's powerful in a weight class that is kind of thin on challengers when you look just a few fights down the line. You know, beyond Faber and a Sun Tzu, it's a lot of folks who've already been tried at this level. Almeida, I think Font could find himself right into that Almeida-Sterling next great prospect picture if things break a certain way. So he's the guy, I think, that's most worth tracking out of this area, probably since Kenny Florian.
I agree. He looked absolutely fantastic. All right, brother. Appreciate the time, man.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure.
Always good to see you.
Back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Mr. Jack Encarnacion. Very sharp man. Always like to talk to that guy. I don't see him a lot, but when I'm up here in the Boston area in his stomping grounds, I like speaking with him. So, Dominick Cruz, UFC Bantamweight champion. Incredible to see the atmosphere in the arena tonight. This guy used to be hated. I mean, I feel like it wasn't that long ago where you struggled to find somebody that liked Dominick Cruz. I always was a fan of the guy. I liked the way it was. I got it, though. I understand. He's got this, you know, real confidence about him, a swagger that borders on cockiness. But as I've always said, I mean, listen, if your job is to lock yourself into a cage with another human being hell-bent on doing physical damage to you, you better have pretty supreme self-belief in yourself. You better be pretty confident. So I try not to fault fighters for you know, a sense of confidence that borders on cockiness. Now, you know, if it gets to arrogance, that's something different. And I never felt like he was there. Although I can admit that you know, he was probably walking a fine line along the way. But it was cool to see him really be a fan favorite. There were, you know, shouts of Cruz throughout the building. Cruz, you know, several times through the night. And I thought that was pretty cool to see. You know, I guess. You know, I'd like to think part of it is probably just people can relate to the struggle. I mean, the guy's gone through so damn much. How do you hate a guy that's had so much taken away from him? I mean, as UFC president Dana White has admitted, I mean, the guy had a share of pay-per-view and was supposed to be on some pretty big cards, including Anderson Silva, Chael Sonnen, too, and didn't get a chance to do that. Would have made a lot of money doing it. So he got a feel for the guy. But, you know, I think it's his time as an analyst. People are used to seeing him in front of the TV. It's a guy that they're, you know, they're hearing from on a weekly basis, and I think you just start to relate to him. So he has definitely become a crowd favorite. Incredible to see that transformation. So now that he's back in the mix, what do you say? I mean, start putting things back in perspective. Now you start, you know, gathering back and looking at everything that he's done. He's on a 12-fight winning streak right now. Yes, there's a lot of inactivity in there, but he's on a 12-fight winning streak right now. The guy has only lost once in 22 career professional contests. And of course, that was the 2007 fight with Uriah Faber, which, of course, you know, he's got that back. He won that. He's 4-0 in the UFC. He's got a win over the current flyweight champ in Demetrius Johnson. He's got a win over the former bantamweight champ in TJ Dillashaw. I mean, you start putting together a pretty impressive little pound-for-pound accolades. Now, you know, where exactly he'll end up our rankings, I'll find out. You know, George Garcia, Gorgeous George, has a lot to do with those rankings. I help as well, kind of administrate them and review them and that sort of thing. But George does spearhead a lot of that, and he's going to have some interesting decisions to make. You know, we try to focus on the past 3 years as the key. I mean, for what we always say, the rankings are what have you done for me lately at MMA Junkie, and you know we try not to go too terribly far back. So, you know, when you look at that 3 year mark, Cruz doesn't have a lot to argue with there. So that's going to be a little bit tough. So I don't know if he'll shoot completely up the ranks, but man, you know. Pound for pound does have a little bit more flexibility than just the divisional rankings. You know, we do take a little bit more historical significance in it. Because let's be honest, pound for pound rankings are kind of, I don't want to say ridiculous, but I mean, it's all theoretical anyway. So you kind of got to look at them a little bit different. So we'll see where he lands up. But Cruz will turn 31 in March. So even with all that lost time, I don't feel like his whole career is behind him or this was some last ditch effort, I guess, to get back at greatness for one more time. I mean, he's still got quite a bit of work left to do and quite a bit of things he can do. So, interesting options available for him. Now, I guess if you want to look at it in one way, I mean, it does sort of open things up for Henan Barao maybe to get back in the mix at some point. You know, he's got some wins to take care of before he can, you know, start saying that he's ready to challenge for the title. But certainly, I think as long as Henan Barao was in the 135-pound division, he may move up. But if TJ Dillashaw was champion, I don't think he was ever getting a shot at this belt, and not after he was dominated pretty thoroughly in two separate fights. So, you know, I guess that's a good thing if you're Henan Barao. Uriah Faber called for the trilogy fight. Certainly that's something that's out there. I think Uriah Faber versus TJ Dillashaw would have been a more interesting fight just because of the friendship and just because of the history between them and all that, and the storyline that's there. I think that would have been the more interesting fight. I don't know if people are going to want to see Faber Cruz 3 right away, but, I mean, listen, Faber's a big star in the sport, so maybe they will. And then, of course, you got Rafa Sanciao hanging out there as well. Man, that guy's kind of become the forgotten challenger in the division. But, you know, he probably deserves his shot in there at some point as well. He's a lot of injuries going on there. So we'll see. It's what's going to happen right away. I don't know. You ask Dominic Cruz what he wants to do. And he said, listen, I don't want to talk about it right now. And honestly, I think that's fair. The guy said, let me soak in the moment a little bit. Let me enjoy this. I know I got a target on my back. So, you know, let me think about this. So it's an interesting time in the bantamweight division. You got a lot of newcomers coming up and some exciting prospects that we'll see in the future. But as far as immediate contenders right now, I don't know that one is actually head and shoulders above the other. So with that said, I think maybe I'd like to see the rematch. I know that sucks. It seems like we have so many rematches in the UFC right now, especially in titles. Gosh, this was such a closely contested fight. And again, I don't know. Are people going to be excited to see Uriah get in there again? You know, Henan certainly isn't ready. Sun Tzu, no, you know, is probably the most deserving guy in terms of accomplishments, but I don't know how marketable that is. And then after that, you start kind of looking down the list a little bit. I mean, unless the UFC goes out and gets a Marlon Moraes or a, you know, a Bibiana Fernandez or somebody like that, you know, I don't know that anybody steps out right away other than TJ Dillashaw. So we'll see. The UFC's got some interesting decisions to make. Dana White said right away, listen, we don't know. I mean, nobody even really hit Dana up with that tonight at the press conference. It wasn't a, you know, matchmaking. It was more about asking Dominic what he wanted to do next. And Dominic said, you know, I want a little time. Let me enjoy this moment, and then we'll start talking about that. He also talked about the injury that he mentioned on the telecast and what was going on. So let's hear from the new champion, Dominic Cruz.
Dominic, could you just take me through the lowest point when you had that injury and you fought once in 4 years or whatever it was? Can you take me to the lowest point, what it is that you visualized to sort of move forward, and did it, you know, what you saw, did it resemble what happened tonight? Was this moment that you experienced tonight sort of make all of that worthwhile?
Not really, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how to put it that when you went through what I've had to go through with the injuries, you can't really put yourself in this situation. You kind of got to actually erase it from your mind in order to get through the injury. And then after you get through the injury, then you got to look at the 12-week camp that's in front of you, because your camp has to be twice as long because you haven't fought in so long and you're fighting for 5 rounds instead of 3. So then after you look at the camp, then you got to look at the weight cut. And then after you get through the weight cut, then you can look at the fight. And then after you get through the fight, you end up here, and I haven't even had a second to take it in. Just here. I'm just being honest. It's like, I don't know. I haven't seen the fight yet. I've had like 4 interviews on the way here. So I'm happy, but I haven't really had a chance to take it in yet and like feel it. The best feeling I had so far was being able to look at everybody and how happy they were that I won. That was cool. That was cool.
Do you think that TJ did enough to earn a rematch? There were a lot of cheers at the end of the fight. Obviously, it's a split decision. Would your preference moving forward be to fight TJ? And if not, what would your preference be moving forward?
I mean, I just won the belt, and I've said this so many times that nothing really belongs to you, because right when you hold the belt up, Dana, Lorenzo, media, everybody in the world's already come up with 3 other matchups for you. People start yelling at you. There's a target on your back. He didn't really win. I could do better. I mean, I haven't even gotten a chance. I haven't even gotten a pat on the back for the win. I'm already getting asked who I'm fighting next. It's like, I'm here. Just let me win. Let me be here. I'll worry about who I'm fighting next when it comes. I don't care right now. I just want to be here and be in the moment, be up here with these other guys that fought their hearts out. I mean, TJ fought his heart out. He's got a sweet suit on. Travis fought his heart out. All these guys, like, let's be here with that instead of worrying about matchups right now.
Hey, Dom, Matteo Urella from Box Hill Mundial. You and I spoke on Thursday about the level of perseverance it takes for a guy like you just to get back to the fight, which I think was a victory in itself, and to get the victory over a tough champ like TJ is even sweeter. If you want to talk a little bit, because you had such a brilliant answer, about the level of perseverance and mental fortitude it took for you to get back the belt that you never lost.
It took a lot of perseverance. To be honest, there's no level for it. You just got to kind of... I said this before, when it rains, it pours. Everybody in this world has felt that before. Like, feels like you're having a bad day, and then you spill coffee on your shirt, and then your tire goes flat, and then you step out and stub your toe on the curb. It's like everything seems to stack up. That's kind of how I felt this time. So when it rains, it pours. You got to put a big, heavy coat on, put one foot in front of the other, and when the rain stops, everything starts growing, the flowers, the grass. Right here, I'm standing in the grass. I'm standing in the flowers. It's a nice feeling. It's going to rain again. It's a matter of time. So it's just a matter of getting through each rainy season, putting one foot in front of the other, keeping your head high, trying to stay positive when you're going through it, and then getting through it and being happy that you did and evolve from it instead of putting your head down through it.
Thank you, champ. Congratulations.
Thank you.
This is for Dominic. I know that you said you haven't really had a chance to process anything yet, but what did you feel like when you got the belt back standing in the octagon? Were you surprised at all?
Wasn't surprised. I felt like I was countering well. I felt like he missed a lot. I felt like I got some sweet takedowns in there that were timed right. You know, I kept the pace high. I was throwing a lot of combinations. There's a lot of things I did well. There's obviously things that I got to look at that I did wrong, probably, like every fight. I mean, if you get hit, you did something wrong. I'd prefer to not have one finger laid on me if I could help it. But it doesn't always go that way. So it just felt good to have the belt and know that I belong here. You have your doubts when you go through what I've gone through, where you go, how good am I? And, you know, 1 minute and 4 years of fighting to come back and fight what was said to be one of the pound-for-pound best. These guys, I shouldn't technically maybe be able to go with them, but I'm winning.
And it looked like you re-injured your knee a little bit.
Did not re-injure my knee. My knee's good. It's my left foot. I had a foot injury before I came in. Plantar fascia tendonitis, lots of golfers get it. I wish I was a golfer, it'd be a lot easier, more money. But, you know, football players get it when they plant on their back foot. Runners get it. It's a normal thing. It'll heal. It'll be fine. It's just really sore. It's weird to me that as fighters, we're not able to tape our feet, tape our ankles. Football players can, basketball players can, hockey players can. The best athletes in the world are able to tape their ankles, tape their feet. A little bit of tape probably would have helped a little bit, but, you know, it is what it is. I made it through. It hurt in the 5th round. Before that, I was fine.
Take one more question.
For Dominic, please. Dominic, I know you don't want to focus on the injury. Thanks for the details that you had. How long do you think it will keep you out, and what is the plan moving forward? I know you don't want to focus on another fight right away, but you lost so much time. What is the plan as far as frequency moving forward?
I didn't say I didn't want to focus on a fight right away, but I mean, I didn't even get to have this win. I'm here still talking about the next fight. So just, I don't know. I mean, I guarantee you Dana has an idea. I guarantee you Lorenzo has an idea. Ask him.
I guarantee we don't.
Well, then there you go. That's about how much I know. So let's give it some time. But as for the injury, I'll be fine. I mean, I've dealt with worse. I'll be fine. Just let me get an MRI on my foot. I don't think I tore it all the way. I think it just hurts real bad. I mean, I just fought for 5 rounds on it.
It was a similar question that TJ got earlier. He was asked if he respected you. I mean, you were in there for a tough fight, Dominic. Did he gain some respect from you tonight?
I always respected him, but we're fighting. So when you're in a fight with somebody, when they're talking about taking your head off and knocking you out in 2 rounds and not giving you any respect whatsoever, you know, I got mad and I said what I wanted to say back. It wasn't about disrespect. It's just about we're getting into a fight. And to me, that doesn't make me a bad role model. It doesn't make me a bad person. I'm going in there to hit this guy, punch him in the face, you know? It's a fight. I'm sorry I didn't say kind things all the time, but it's a fight. He didn't exactly do very kind things to me in there, and I didn't do very kind things to him back, so forgive me for my mean words.
And just one last one for you, Dominic. You kind of surprised us taking a swipe at Kenny Florian there at the end. Can you was that friendly fire, or was that...
That's friendly fire. I mean, I like Kenny, you know? He didn't pick me in the fight. He gave me really no chance in this fight. So I'm just a little poke. Nothing big. He's got great hair.
So Dominic Cruz soaking in the moment, enjoying his time back on top. UFC champion. The belt that he never lost. Plantar fasciitis. Fasciitis? Is that how you say it? I'm not going to lie. I didn't know what it was. So if you're like me, don't feel bad. I had to look it up. So plantar fasciitis, according to Wikipedia, also known as jogger's heel, is a disorder that results in pain in the heel and bottom of the foot. The pain is usually most severe with the first steps of the day or following a period of rest. Pain is also frequently brought on by bending the foot and toes upward toward the shin and may be worsened by a tight Achilles tendon. The condition typically comes on slowly. So, makes sense that he would be limping pretty bad at the end of 5 rounds, especially as much as Dominic Cruz moves around. And, man, did he look like a dominant, vintage Dominic Cruz, man. It was fantastic. The takedowns that he had while he wasn't able to secure the position for very long on the ground, I think, you know, he probably surprised TJ Dillashaw with the number of takedowns that he had. Just a great performance overall. Now, what does it mean for TJ Dillashaw? You know, it's kind of interesting when you think about it. I mean, you know, we talked about Dominic Cruz winning the belt that he never lost, and that's a fair way to build. I mean, that's not any kind of you know, promoter hype or whatever. I mean, he never lost his belt. So what does that make TJ Dillashaw? I mean, if TJ Dillashaw never wins the title back, or if, you know, he has to wait for Dominic Cruz to step away before he wins the title back, do you put an asterisk on that run? I mean, do you say this wasn't a real title run? It's not his fault that Dominic Cruz was hurt. I mean, all he did was go out there and beat the monster of Henan Barao. So I don't think you can really blame TJ Dillashaw for any of this, but man, it does kind of feel like, I don't want to diminish what he did or what he accomplished, but if he doesn't beat Dominic Cruz, I don't know if he can ever legitimately say he was a champion. I mean, there's always got to be that thought in the back of his mind. Now, he's still got that belt in his house, and he still cashed those paychecks, and people will call him champ until the day he dies, and deservedly so for all those things. But is there that little lingering sense of doubt, like, I never beat that guy. I never beat that guy. TJ looked downright distraught at the press conference. There's no doubt about it. Very frustrated. Thinks he won the fight. And, again, you can't fault him for having that opinion. I mean, I scored it for him, even though I thought it was a very close fight. So he really, really looked upset. Left the cage with his head down, you know, shaking his head. And you could see him at the press conference visibly just every now and then. Nobody would be talking to him. You know, he wouldn't be directly answering a question, but you could just see him pondering it and shaking his head and you know, just disbelief more than anything else. I think he really thought he had done enough to win the fight. And he finished strong. finished really, really strong. You know, you always like to see guys going well in the championship rounds. I thought, to be honest with you, as the movement started to slow, I really thought that he was running out of gas. I'm like, oh my gosh, Dominic Cruz broke him. And I think he was just being smart and pacing himself, making some adjustments. And I thought TJ finished very, very strong. Again, I did give him rounds 4 and 5. But it just wasn't enough. It was too little, too late. Yeah, some of the early work from Dominic Cruz was enough to keep him in control and winning the fight. So what comes next for TJ Dillashaw? I think right away I'm thinking rematch. But, I know with the number of rematches there are, people are probably going to be frustrated with that. But I just don't see that anybody else is standing head and shoulders right now where I think that's the fight I got to see. So we'll see. You know, certainly I'm sure there's going to be some question marks. I heard some people yelling from the stands tonight, snake in the grass, snake in the grass. It was kind of wild to hear all that, man. TJ had gotten some hate. I think whether that's just the people that love Uriah Faber and kind of buy into it or love Conor McGregor and love what Conor McGregor pointed out, who knows? But it did seem like TJ Dillashaw was you know, catching a lot of flack. So, where he goes from here just remains to be seen. The UFC didn't want to tip their hand on it, but you got to think that TJ is going to come back, work his ass off. If they do give him a rematch, I'm sure that he will be up to the challenge. Of course, it's funny to think, man, TJ Dillashaw actually turns 30 in February. He's not that much younger than Dominic Cruz. It's crazy. It's not like, you know, TJ's the kid just coming up and plenty of time on his side. I mean, he's pretty much in the same boat as Dominic, with the caveat that Dominic hasn't put his body through the last 4 years worth of battles. So, you know, maybe Dominic's actually the fresher guy right now and ready to go on a tear. So, interesting to hear. But, listen, I think you can hear the pain in the voice when you listen to TJ Dillashaw.
Congratulations on a great run as champion. Curious tonight in terms of execution, if you felt like you controlled it all, if you were surprised with the outcome, just kind of walk us through if you felt like you were able to execute your game plan.
You know, Dominic's a very good fighter. I do feel like I won the fight. You know, just pressure alone and controlling the octagon and landing the bigger strikes. You know, I know he got a few takedowns that I don't really feel like should be scored that great with 3 seconds control, you know, total. It's tough, man. It's a tough one to take. You know, I definitely didn't perform to my best either. You know, I maybe threw a little too hard and could have touched a little bit and set some things up. And, you know, thinking back on it, yeah, I messed up. You know, I mean, but I still think I won that fight.
His left leg, you really worked on that. Can you touch on your game plan there?
Yeah, man, I mean, I guess with every fighter, you know, I mean, not just him necessarily, but just a little bit everyone, you being well-rounded and setting everything up. And I knew it was landing, and I can see him limping. You couldn't even walk after the fight, and I probably should have stuck on a little bit more, actually.
The you know, obviously the judges saw a lot of things very differently between themselves. Mm-hmm. Do you feel how do you feel about that? I mean, do you feel like you're obligated to always get a finish to avoid this sort of situation, or how do you feel?
I think I waited a little bit too much. I should have pushed for the finish. I know I rocked him a couple times in those later rounds where I landed some big shots, and I maybe should have touched a little bit, set it up, and pushed for that finish. Can't ever be happy with, you know, going to the decision. I mean, obviously, you wish the sport was a little bit better with, you know, knowing who's winning and who's not, but it's just the way it goes down, man. It's real frustrating.
Was there any real difference between simulating that combat and actually being there in person? Was there anything unexpected?
No, man. I mean, I knew I'd miss some shots. You know, I knew that was going to be the case. I knew I'd miss. I just didn't follow up sometimes when I did. You know, I'd miss a big shot instead of touching afterwards. I kind of let him scurry out. You know, he wasn't doing nothing. He was running. You know, I think I controlled the cage over 18 minutes of it from what I've heard.
And just quickly, if I could, for TJ, I know it's a tough for you right now, but talk about the fight playing out. It did seem as things went on, you kind of settled down into more of a straightforward approach, you know, a little bit less of the frantic movement that we were expecting to see. You know, was that an adjustment that you made on the fly? Was it a reaction? Was it, you know, the pace was so high? Just explain, you know, kind of what the adjustments were as you went along.
It was just kind of the reactions to what was going on in the fight, and it was working. You know, my touch pulls returns, you know, making a miss and hitting him again, and then just knowing he had nothing on his punches. You know, I mean, I felt like whatever he's going to give me wasn't very dangerous, you know, and I feel like I was coming forward, and that was how I was going to win the fight, just being the more dominant fighter and coming forward and hitting him with those big shots and landing those kicks, you know, and if he went for some takedowns, wear him out by defending him or, you know, getting right back up as soon as he got him and not letting him get anything out of him.
And you said you think you won the fight. A lot of people did score for you, but people are going to be asking you for answers, what happened. People are going to point to things like the camp change, all of that. I mean, was there any concern? Was there any feeling? Was this any different coming into the fight tonight than it was when you won the title?
No, man, I felt very prepared coming to this fight. You know, the camp change had nothing to do with it. I did my last camp out in Colorado as well. I felt awesome coming in, you know. Rough camp with getting a staph infection through it and having to deal with that and messing up my cardio, but, you know, that's just something you got to deal with. It comes with every camp, but I definitely feel like I won that fight, you know. I mean, pushing forward, being the aggressor, landing the bigger shots, I just don't understand how you can't score it for that.
So the UFC bantamweight title leaves Boston in Dominick Cruz's hands. And, man, the division is exciting again. It's good to see Dominick Cruz back, and it's interesting to see what's going to happen next. Let's talk about the co-main event real quickly. Lightweight fight between former UFC lightweight champion Anthony Pettis and, of course, Eddie Alvarez. I got to say, a close fight here. Didn't quite live up to the fireworks I think everybody had hoped for. I think we were all excited to see these two go out. I know I got really pumped up about this fight once I was here in Boston. Both guys seemed to be in incredible shape, and both guys seemed to be in incredible states of mind as well. And I thought we were going to be in for a barn burn. It just never materialized. You know, Eddie Alvarez, probably rightfully so, leaning a lot on his wrestling, admitted after the fact that he wanted things to be a little bit more exciting. Didn't mean to use quite as much of his wrestling as he did use. But it was the right play. It was a good decision for him. Of course, that is, you know, has been Anthony Pettis's Achilles heel every now and then. He's, you know, he's got spectacular striking. He's got really good jiu-jitsu as well. I didn't necessarily get a chance to show it, although it was pretty impressive the way he kind of balanced himself in midair in between takedowns and was able to get himself right back up to his feet each time. But, you know, would it have been different over five rounds? I don't know. I don't necessarily think so. You know, I guess with 10 more minutes to work, it did seem that Anthony Pettis was coming alive a little bit later on. So, you know, maybe you can say there was a big shift in momentum happening. But, you know, I will say that I thought Anthony Pettis didn't seem to have quite the, I guess the sense of urgency is the best way to put it. And I thought he needed to get things going a little bit faster. It's one thing to be comfortable out there, and he certainly has every right to be comfortable on his feet. I mean, the guy can strike with anybody, and I thought his punches, I thought his counter punches were really, really effective. As I mentioned, I was sitting next to Brett Okamoto as well. I actually scored this fight for Anthony Pettis. I gave him rounds one and two, and Brett Okamoto actually scored the fight the same way. And, you know, he asked me at the end, you know, what I thought about it, and I said, man, you know what, I gave the fight to Anthony Pettis, but I don't feel right about it. You know, I feel like I kind of got the wrong score here. And he said, no, I got it 2-1 for Anthony Pettis as well, and I think this is a bad decision that it went to Eddie Alvarez in a split decision. I don't know if I would say that. I don't know if I felt it was a bad decision, because I kind of feel like the right guy won at the end, even though I was scoring it round by round and gave it to Pettis. Just another close fight, a really weird clash of styles, and kind of one of those where I guess it kind of depends on what you're valuing and what you're putting your belief in is the more effective strikes. I mean, Alvarez was definitely the one walking forward, and I think that any time you're moving backwards and looking to counter, you put yourself in a bad position in the judge's eyes. I think, you know, judges tend to reward aggression, and rightfully so. I mean, it's about the offense that you're able to create. I don't know. I just watching it live, I scored it rounds one and two for Anthony Pettis based on the counter strikes, based on the fact that I thought the wrestling that, you know, Eddie Alvarez was doing was not getting much done, was not really succeeding very much, was not really doing much to impact the fight. Other than the positioning of it, of course. You know, yes, and he was definitely dictating where the fight was taking place because it was taking place against the fence. But from that point, I didn't think he really necessarily did as much with the positions as he could have. And I thought Anthony Pettis' counterpunches were sharp. I think he hurt. You know, he hit a couple of nice shots to the body early. And I thought Eddie Alvarez, honestly, was hurt. The way he was kind of moving a little bit, he seemed kind of awkward. And I thought maybe he had been bothered by some of those early body blows, you know. Excuse me, whether or not that was the case, tough to tell. But, excuse me, I didn't hate Pettis losing this fight either. You know, even though I scored that way, it's kind of funny. I scored both the top two fights the opposite way of the way they came out, and I don't necessarily have any problem with the decision. So I think it was just another close fight and kind of a weird clash of styles. Now, Eddie Alvarez wants to fight for the UFC lightweight title next. I just don't see that happening. I mean, number one, you got to think that if Conor McGregor wins, and obviously that's a huge, huge if, but if Conor McGregor wins, you got to think that he's got to go up to he should go down to 145 to fight Frank Gregor at UFC 200. And even if not, I just don't know that that was the type of performance. Let's say Rafael dos Anjos proves victorious and maintains the lightweight title. I just don't know if that's the kind of fight where people are going to say, yep, give Eddie Alvarez a title shot. He definitely deserves it. Now, I know he's only fought the best of the best, and he has, man. This guy, love his attitude. You know, you talk to him, say, man, don't you ever want an easy go? Don't you ever want a freebie every now and then? And say, you know, why do I got to face the best of the best every single time? And he says, no, I want to face the best every single time. You got to respect that. But you got guys like Tony Ferguson; they're on an incredible roll. You got guys like Khabib Nurmagomedov who are coming back from a long layoff but have an incredible record. Now, Khabib probably isn't walking right into a title shot, but could he walk into a fight with Eddie Alvarez? Maybe so. Or maybe Eddie Alvarez, Tony Ferguson. Who knows? You got some big fights there available, but I just don't think Eddie Alvarez is going to jump up to the front of the line with all the things that are going on right now. So, you know, had it been a more scintillating performance, had he absolutely destroyed Anthony Pettis, then yeah, maybe you say he could do it. I just honestly don't think this was enough for Anthony Pettis, or excuse me, for Eddie Alvarez to get that decision. But we'll see. We'll see. Listen to Eddie tell you what he thinks about it. And see if you can sway your line of thinking at all.
Eddie, congratulations on the win. You know, a question that's always asked after a fight like that, you know, when it was immediately over and even during the fight when you're going back to your corner, all those different moments, did you feel like the fight was going your way? Did you feel like you were executing your game plan and the judges would reward you for that?
I did. I didn't see a split decision going in, and I'm the type of fighter who assumes I lose every round. I need my coach to tell me how I did. I just but that fight in particular, when I went back at the third, I assumed that I won the fight. So to see a split was that was a little shocking for me. I would have liked to let my hands go a little more. Anthony's a dangerous guy, and the idea was to wear him down, take all the pop off that fancy stuff, and just scrape him off the cage and beat him up. And he's so talented. It's just, it's tough to take risk against a guy like that.
And then you obviously said what you said in the cage about, you know, you feel like you're a title contender now. That next shot is happening in March, and then it's kind of unknown exactly what will happen. You know, March isn't that far away, but you've got a unique situation now with a champion who could be in two different weight classes. So how do you approach that, being in your spot? What's going through your head about what's next?
When I signed with Lorenzo and Dana, I simply told them I would like the best guys that you guys have in the division. I didn't want top 15. I wasn't trying to look to show the fans something that I wasn't. I wanted the best guys. I didn't want knockouts and things like that. So they've given me the best guys. And to be honest with you, I don't know what I deserve. It's up to the boss man here. Whoever they give me, you know, that's who we're going after. Hopefully it's for the title. I would love a shot at the title.
If you feel like a title is possible, how long are you willing to willingly sit on a sideline for an opportunity like that?
I don't mind. It's up to these guys. It's not my strategy. You know, I'm fighting the best guys. So that's the next best guy in line. So far is Donald, who just fought for the title. Gilbert, who fought twice for the title, and then the title holder, Anthony Pettis. So I'm not asking for easy fights. I want the best guys, and I feel like I have the ability to adapt and the experience to beat the top guys in this division.
Freddie, you won, I guess, what could be called a cautious fight. You know, you didn't take a lot of unnecessary risks. You closed the distance. You know, you disallowed Anthony to do a lot of his striking at his preferred distance. Now, do you feel, you know, number one, it's a win over a very dangerous opponent, but at the same time, you know, there aren't a lot of highlight clips that could market you or sell you as, you know, a desirable contender for the belt. So is that a double-edged sword? I mean, do you think you could have taken more risks, or do you think that would have been a bad idea?
It is. I'm my biggest critic before anyone. I don't need anyone to tell me sort of what I should have did. I want to be more exciting, trust me. But I'm not taking guys who are ranked 25 and 30. There's a real small margin for error at the top, and you can't be going out there being reckless. When a guy like Anthony Pettis, he's dangerous, he's talented, but he has a deep hole. So it's I need to exploit that, and I'd be stupid not to. So I definitely got the job done. If I was able to do some highlights in between, then that's great. But look, I want to do something huge here. I want to get knockouts. It's not my goal to do that. It's just I'm going against the best guys, and I'm trying to do my best to win and be exciting.
Okay, the other big fight on this card. Travis Brown, Matt Mitrione. Dude, man, what a bizarre fight as well. I mean, this was a fun night of fights. So the prelims started out great, but some weird fights at the top for sure. But none weirder than Travis Brown and Matt Mitrione. Okay, the big thing in here, of course, the two eye pokes. Travis Brown says, listen, I'm sorry. I did not mean to do that. Certainly, it was an accident. You could tell he was very, very apologetic. You could see it in the cage, and he explained it a little bit afterwards. But, I mean, they were still infractions. There's no doubt about it. And they were definitely causing Matt Mitrione some issues. He couldn't see very well. He was having to hold his eye closed for a little bit. But, you know, Travis Brown definitely did not mean to do that. What he did mean to do was land that clean right hand that busted up Matt Mitrione's eye. And I was sure to ask at the post-fight press conference, you know, hey, you were in there. What did you see? And, you know, did the eye pokes have anything to do with it, or was it just the right hand? And Travis started to answer and say it was the right hand, but UFC President Dana White jumped in and said, no, listen, we watched the replay, and the eye was fine before that. Yes, the two eye pokes were bad, but they were okay, and then that right hand opened things up. And I actually just watched the fight replay here just a second ago here in the here in the apartment here in Boston. It looked like the same to me, that everything was going okay with the eye, and that right hand just totally screwed everything up. Man, very scary. Now, of course, we've seen some hematomas over the years in combat sports, but that one was just bad. Just the positioning of it was awful. And Matt Mitrione looked like it bothered him a little bit when he saw it, too. He wanted to get out of the cage at the end of the fight, and they wouldn't let him out of there. They made him stay in there. He pressed some ice to it, but that was not a good-looking injury whatsoever. Now, Travis Brown did not have a good week here in Boston. He was booed at the weigh-ins. He was heckled at the weigh-ins. He was booed at the fight. He was heckled at the fight. He was booed at the start of the fight. He was booed even worse at the end of the fight. And I think that was, more than anything, just Boston reacting to the eye pokes and essentially saying that he was cheating. I don't think he did it on purpose, but they are still infractions, and probably infractions that deserve to have a point taken. I'm not sure the referee handled that thing properly with two pretty serious infractions. I think a point could have easily been deducted. Now, it wouldn't have changed anything because Travis Brown was able to get the finish in the third round. But, gosh, things are just not going good for Travis Brown in terms of fan support. But I will say this. He was very mentally strong about it and doesn't seem to bother him whatsoever, at least on the surface. Maybe it's getting to him on the inside. Yeah, he's a big dude, tough dude. But I've always felt like he was very kind of self-aware and very kind of in tune to what's going on around him. And so I know he hears these things, and I know he has a sense for it. And, you know, I don't know the guy personally, but I've just had, you know, several conversations with him over the years. And I don't know. I could see that kind of stuff might bother him a little bit, but at least on the outside, he's saying it doesn't. These are just haters, and I'm not worried about him.
And then a couple quick ones for Travis. Congratulations on your win. You had said that you wanted to make a statement tonight. You feel like coming off that one? You know, talk about your performance. Were you happy with it start to finish?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a perfectionist, so I'm not extremely happy about that fight. I mean, for me going in the third round, you know, it's a win. And it was a win against a very unorthodox, tricky kind of guy. His movements just threw me off, you know. I mean, he'd throw his left and then duck his head, and I don't know. It was kind of a funky fight, you know. It's kind of hard to really look good against that guy. But, you know, I'm happy I got the win. I got back in the win column. And, you know, whatever these guys have for me next, I'm ready.
And I have to ask, you know, you've been talking about it being a funky fight. There were two eye pokes. Can you kind of talk about, was the referee warning you about that? Did you think he handled it right? And then you kind of went after him. Sometimes we see an eye pokes, guys will step back, they know they poked him in the eye. Can you talk about, did you feel yourself poking you in the eye? Is that just something that you do? It doesn't matter. You fight until the referee tells you to stop. Just what was kind of going through your mind in those situations?
Yeah, you know, again, it's one of those things where in the cage, you know, I was apologizing up and down to Matt because, you know, that's not my game. I don't try to, you know, I'm not a dirty fighter. And, you know, even in the fight, when I'm like, Matt, man, I'm really sorry. I promise you I'm not trying to do that, you know. He's like, dude, I'm jumping in on you. He's like, it's all right. It just happens. You know what I mean? It's one of those things, man, where it's an accident. You know what I mean? And I mean, if you watch the fight, it's not like I'm moving towards him trying to, you know, paw at him and poke his eye. It's like every time he would jump in, I would try to back up and either hold my hand out. Third round, I think I finally started closing my fist. But, you know, I mean, just part of the game, I guess. It's not – there's no malicious intent behind it.
No, Travis, at any one point, did you feel there might be a disqualification or no contest? It was a little weird. I think a lot of fans expected that might be a warning for, I believe, the second accidental eye poke, and the fight sort of continued from there.
No, I'm not. I don't think it was something that needed to be a point taken away. Again, you know, it's I wasn't moving forward. I wasn't going after it, you know, but that's why a referee's in there. I mean, he warned me a couple, you know, on the last time, you know, he's like, man, I, you know, next time I'm taking a point. So I, you know, did what I could do and to not let that happen again. But I mean, it was an accident, you know. I don't say.
And at this point, are you just happy to put this behind you and try to climb up the rankings again? Or if the promotion suggested some sort of a rematch, how would you think about that?
Rematch with who?
With Matt.
A rematch with Matt?
Yeah, just on account of maybe some of the controversy, just to put it to rest.
Is there that much controversy about the fight?
On the internet.
What about to you?
It was weird, man. I wasn't in a cage, so I couldn't tell you.
Well, neither was anybody else, but you say there's controversy. So what do you think?
So I think that, you know, it felt like the referee didn't take the second eye poke as seriously as, you know, as he could have. But, you know, again.
So when a guy jumps in on somebody else that's defending themselves, you think that's necessary when they're not doing it intentionally?
It's up to the commission, I guess, who had to set these rules, right?
Yeah, commission and refs, so I don't understand the controversy.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
For Dana. Dana, do you happen to have a medical update on Matt Mitrione?
Do I have a what?
A medical update on him, anywhere from the hospital, and exactly what the nature of the injury was and how he's doing?
Yeah, he is at the hospital, obviously his right eye, and he's getting his head checked out, but I felt like I was the only guy in the place that saw his shoulder, like, popping out of his skin. Did anybody else see that? I mean, apparently he got a separated shoulder, but they said it happens to him all the time.
Thanks, Dana. Travis, just quickly for you,
he said,
I guess,
separated shoulder from the eye poke.
Well, Travis, just to touch on that, I mean, I guess if there is controversy, what people are trying to say is, did the eye poke contribute to the swelling? You had the best view of anybody there. Was it just that clean right hand that started everything, or did you see any swelling?
I'll answer that. It did. I saw it on the instant replay. They showed it on the instant replay in slow motion. Before he hit him, his eye was fine. When he hit him, the eye just started to swell up and blow right up.
That was in the third round.
Absolutely. And then the last thing I'd have for you, Travis, is it was kind of a rough week as far as the fans. I mean, at the weigh-ins, we heard a couple boos, a little trash talk. Same thing tonight. We heard some boos, a couple, you know, hecklers or whatever. How is that soaking in with you, having to deal with that? Do you know where it's coming from? Is it tough for you to deal with? I mean, what's the emotion like for you?
Yeah, man, I mean, people can't smash my dreams, so they try to assassinate my character, you know? And that's what people do that aren't comfortable with themselves.
So Travis Brown picks up the big win. Don't know what comes next for him. He certainly didn't seem to enjoy it as much as he could have because of all the controversy that was around it. But, hey, life goes on, and we'll see. He's going to find himself in some big fights. The heavyweight division, that was a big win for him over Matt Mitrione. And, of course, Matt Mitrione was gambling on himself. He's one of this growing group of fighters that's fighting their contract out to the very end and then taking a look and seeing what they can get on the free agent market. So, did Matt do himself any favors by losing, or, you know, does he cut himself a little bit of slack because of the odd things that did happen in the fight? Maybe the UFC says, hey, man, this guy was fighting at a disadvantage. Who knows? Listen, there were so many fun fights in this card. Patrick Cote looked incredible. The guy is just fighting better than ever. It's amazing. And I think he's just now getting his UFC record over 500. 10 wins and 9 losses in the UFC octagon. That's incredible. Ed Herman was not looking necessarily fantastic against Tim Boach before he got that big TKO. The big knee right up the middle was impressive. Luke Sanders with the incredible debut over Maximo Blanco. That guy looks like the real deal. Coach John Crouch was happy to yell at me at K-Shot after that fight. So I've been telling you about this guy. I've been telling you about this guy for years. He's the real deal. And he said that Augusto Mendez, of course, who was supposed to fight on this card, but had to bow out. He was supposed to face Charles Rosa. He was one of three people that Charles Rosa was scheduled to face. Coach Crouch said that Tanquinho will get another shot in the UFC. He says, listen, he's the real deal as well. Paul Felder, incredible submission win over Darren Cruikshank, and then revealed in the post-fight press conference that he found out a week ago that his father had cancer, and so he's fighting with a very, very heavy heart and was able to do something impressive. Ilir Latifi, just 30 seconds to floor Sean O'Connell with a massive right hand. Charles Rosa, we mentioned him. He looked great. Rob Font looked amazing as well. Just some great fights top to bottom. It really was. Very entertaining night of fights. So hopefully you tuned in. If you didn't, there's definitely some stuff for you to go catch on UFC Fight Pass or on your DVR or wherever else. So I'm going to wrap things up here since I'm rolling solo. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. And I've got a frosty beverage from Boston Beer Works, same place we hosted the show the other night. Grabbed a growler from them, prepared for ahead of time. So I'm going to wrap this thing up. Send everything to Cole Coffee so he can edit everything together and put this out for you. I hope you guys enjoy a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff. I'm sorry that my man Matt Erickson was sick and couldn't join in. Sorry that my man Cole Coffee was at home, but hey, listen, we promised we were going to try to do this, and so I said I'll go solo, so hopefully you can put up with my voice for all this time. Apologize. Press conference was tough today, man. I had to shoot video and ask questions, and it was a rough night, man. It was a weird one for the MMA Junkie team. Luckily, we all pulled through. My man Dan Stupp is now going to be trying to dig us out of a hole all day on Monday, but you know we're going to come together and bring some fantastic content to you. So, anyway, listen, World Series of Fighting coming up this week. I'll be back in Las Vegas. I will not be traveling for that event out in Memphis, Tennessee. Instead, I will just be hanging out, but I'm sure we'll get some interviews and all that stuff. I'll be back with Cold Coffee to do that. And then, of course, the following week, Newark, New Jersey. Listen, it's snowing outside in Boston. There's no way in hell I'm coming back to the East Coast right now. I'm staying home for that one. Then it just keeps rolling. UFC 196 in Las Vegas. But we got you covered. Don't you worry. Me and Cole Coffee will be back together for the rest of the month. And we'll have you taken care of. So, listen, hope you enjoyed this fight. Sunday night fights are all right. except for the fact that it's 6 o'clock on a Monday morning and I'm ready to be done working. So I guess what I really just need to say is thanks for listening. We'll be right back.